This is City Lights on WABE, where ATL meets NPR. I'm Lois Wrights. It's great to be with you. The American playwright Arthur Miller famously dramatized the Salem witch trials and the McCarthy era with his play The Crucible. Now, Aurora Theater is picking up this story 10 years after Miller's play ends. We have director Justin Anderson along with lead actor Diani Rodriguez in studio. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you here. So just to catch people up on the story, tell us about Abigail Williams' role in The Crucible.
You want to take that, Diani?
I do not.
Okay. Well, as most people know or may remember, she was the instigator of all of the initial accusations of calling neighbors and family members witches, and a variety of circumstances around that, including her relationship with John Proctor. And the curious thing about Abigail is once everything started to unravel and sort of grow in suspicion, and scores and scores and scores of folks were accused and put in prison and were working through court proceedings, she ducked out of town. She leaves The Crucible before the final act of the play, never to see any of the consequences, basically, of what she's done.
Like so she 19 people
correct, hanging. And one crushed by rocks. So she was not around for any of those deaths. Although she is the instigator and sort of ground zero for those events occurring, and most people and it's alluded to in The Crucible, believe that she either ended up around Boston or hopped a ship to Barbados. But there really is no real record of her time after Salem.
So one could speculate guilt or just wanting to get out of Dodge.
Absolutely.
Okay. So where is Abigail at the beginning of Abigail 1702, your play?
She is... In the beginning of Abigail, it's 1702, and she's in a place called Weft Hill, right outside of Boston. So close to Boston, and she, you know, is 10 years older, 10 years more, you know, wizened, I guess, 10 years more potentially guilty, 10 years more devout. She's in what maybe potentially seems to be a nice little corner of the world where she's, you know, devoid of human contact, besides some potential pox patients that she treats, content to be by herself with her devotion to the Lord.
So we have a sense that perhaps her past is catching up with her. Is she this devoted and treating the pox patients because of her guilt and remorse?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It definitely comes across as a bit of a penance. She says a lot in the play that she lives under Cain's curse. She talks about how she, you know, lives in this home, and the dirt is rocky and salty, so it's difficult to grow anything. But she seems quite contented, you know, barring the inescapability of her past in the literal form, and also just dreams and manic delusions. And she's not well, but she's as well as one could expect,
yeah.
I guess.
Who's the real witch in this story?
That's a great question.
Miller's Crucible was, as we said, a parable about the political climate of his day. Justin, do you find a similar parallel to today's world in this play?
I'm not sure if we can draw an immediate parallel to political issues, but perhaps from a social lens, I think that the conversation about and the need for forgiveness is something that never goes out of vogue. I think particularly in the context in which we live, where our lives are splashed across social media, and we have these sort of lines of records that if it's on the internet, it's never going away, mm-hmm. right? And so I think we live in a much more public way, perhaps, than we have ever in history. And so it is curious to me to wrestle with an idea of chalking things up to indiscretions or making mistakes. Is it possible to reinvent yourself when you live in such a public landscape?
It almost sounds like you could be talking about the Scarlet Letter. Absolutely.
There is a similarity. And I think these kinds of stories, they might be not necessarily tropes, but frameworks, I think, that are familiar in the human experience. They resurface because I think that's what makes us human. I think we vet our ability to be resilient or to overcome against mistakes that we have made in the past. And I think that's what inevitably makes us human beings, our sort of the contrast of the light and the dark that we are wrestling with on a daily basis, striving hopefully to become better and work past those issues.
If you are just joining us, we're speaking with Justin Anderson and Diani Rodriguez, director and lead actor respectively, in Aurora Theater's production of Abigail 1702. We'll be back in just a moment on WABE.
Support for WABE comes from Fernbank Museum, presenting Gladiators, a new exhibit featuring Roman artifacts, interactive technology, and immersive environments that explore these heroes of the Colosseum. Information at fernbankmuseum.org.
When you're catching up on the day's news, the headlines are a good place to start. But to really understand the world and what's happening, you want the full story. All Things Considered takes the time to explore the details and differences to find meaning in the day's biggest stories. Stand with the facts. Listen every day. Join us weekday afternoons from 4 until 6:30 for All Things Considered here on 90.1 WABE.
We're back with City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes, talking with Justin Anderson and Diani Rodriguez about Aurora Theater's production of Abigail 1702. Playwright Roberto Aguirre Sacasa has written for Glee and Riverdale. What do we know about his pivot to such a serious topic?
Well, it's curious because I think he is sort of the perfect writer to engage with this kind of story because of his penchant for the fantastical and the thrilling, but also he has a real ear for romance. And there's a great blend of all of these different genres in this play. He's employed full time with Marvel Comics as well, and writes for a series of comics, and of course Riverdale's based on the old Archie comics, and the reinvention that they have created with that series is pretty compelling. But to see the way that he works and blends all of these different genres is really captivating, and I think that's with this particular piece he's crafted something that's inherently theatrical. But also, I think, eminently accessible. Mm-hmm. And so he's taking sort of benchmarks of what you might know from history or from another play and placing them in really completely imagined circumstances and hopefully allowing them to play out in truthful and sort of non-anachronistic ways. But it does feel rather contemporary at times, we're stepping out of the time period, but in terms of human relationships, feels very accessible.
Are your costumes contemporary?
No, absolutely not. No, we tried very hard, much to our stage manager's chagrin sometimes, to keep it as period as we could, which involves a lot of props, we came to find. But no, the costumes are very period. I know that a lot of even the materials used, mm-hmm. our costume designer, Kathleen, tried to keep very, very period. It's quite lovely, quite heavy and warm.
Oh,
but
I
definitely
hope air conditioning's functioning well at
it
Aurora.
Is. You can hear it sometimes.
Well, now we're going to be listening for it, Diani. Diani, you've brought your wonderful talent to musicals such as Aurora Productions of Into the Woods and In the Heights. What's it like to play this complicated character with such a twisted past?
Oh, it's very hard. Next question. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's really complicated. A friend of mine saw it last night, Christian, mm-hmm. He was at the end of it. He was just kind of in stunned silence, and I was like, "Oh man, what's up?" And he said, "I didn't know." That it was going to be that kind of a ride. And then he just kind of looked at me and he goes, "I don't know what I would do if I were you. I think I would go home and just cry for hours and sleep."
Have you?
No. I will say it's been very rough on my knees, my whole social media. My social media sort of persona lately has been, man, Abigail prays a lot. And like just pictures of me with like double ice bags on my knees. Oh. And it's just very physical. My goal and Justin's goal was to, whether she is redeemed or not, I like to think that people want to know that after Salem, she did not escape unscathed. Mm. She says it. She says that I have suffered and she suffers, and I wanted to physically show her suffering. So you either are rooting for her or you're like, yeah, hit her some more, you know? Which, you know, takes a toll when you're
Absolutely.
In your mid-30s.
In a story where the supernatural plays such a huge role, Diane, how do you find the reality in your performance? Or do you not?
That's been very frightening. And there, you know, has also been some discussion of how heightened do you want to be for an hour and 30 minutes or for, you know, however long the whole time, because then there's no respite. But for me, honestly, it was just, okay, if I had these kinds of nightmares and I could not distinguish between reality and fantasy or the supernatural, how would I feel? And it's very much been a matter of, if I had the weight of basically 20 murders mm-hmm. on my soul and I had to live with that every day, and if I had the weight of my own guilt and the outside world knowing that, or even the fear of them knowing that, and if my, you know, potential conjurings in my own mind of what the devil would look like or what hell would look like were something I had to face, I mean, I'd be scared.
Yeah.
So I figured just run with that. Like, that's a good starting point.
Is it her religiosity that keeps suicide out of mind? Or did you ever... Did you talk about that in your interpretation?
I don't know if it became a sort of a primary focus in early discussions, but I would chalk that up, I think, to the religiosity to a certain extent. But I also think there's something so strong-willed about Abigail, and almost in the way that it manifests itself into a martyr complex, in that I think there is a sense of, I deserve the shame and guilt that I feel connected to the actions that I've engaged in. And so therefore ending my life, for one, I think would be too easy, and two, certainly would probably damn her, you know, to...
This is one of those damned if you
absolutely,
do it.
Absolutely.
Yes. On steroids.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's, you know, we certainly talked about just the fabric of the time period as well, and the deep-rooted connection to seeking a faith-driven life. And you can't really discount that from the time in which this play is set. And so it's insipid, and I know that sounds like a very negative connotation, but it's not. It's interwoven into almost every aspect of life. And so if that's the real mindset and point of view that one is beholden to, that's the line that you're going to toe. And I think making sure that you're checking the correct boxes and seeking that devotion and constant escalation of good works, that's the way to, you know, for Abigail to somehow find peace.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Justin Anderson and Diane Rodriguez, director and lead actor of Aurora Theater's production of Abigail 1702. We'll return and hear more about the play after a short break.
Support for WABE comes from Ackerman Security, providing custom-designed smart home security systems with remote access as well as video surveillance, fire protection, and monitored entry alarms to protect your home and business. Ackerman, the sign of real security.
And from Live Nation, welcoming Alison Krauss and David Gray for one night at Chastain Park Amphitheater on Saturday, September 30th. Tickets on sale now at livenation.com. Alison Krauss and David Gray together at Chastain.
Join WABE and PBA 30 for an exclusive opportunity to get up close and personal with one of the most honored storytellers of our time. Acclaimed historian Dr. Henry Louis Gates will discuss his life and career and share a behind-the-scenes look at the Finding Your Roots television series. Sunday, October 1st at 5 p.m. at the Carter Center. For tickets and more information, visit pba.org/gates or call 678-686-0335.
We're back with City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes, along with Justin Anderson and Diani Rodriguez, talking about Aurora Theater's production of Abigail 1702. There is a part of this story where Abigail, can you say she has a relationship or is drawn to a man she's helping to care for? How does that play out?
That's a difficult one. Yes, absolutely. And you can imagine that if her whole goal is to serve for the rest of her life and to pay penance for the rest of her life, that meeting somebody that she potentially has, at the very least, a human connection with, mm-hmm. and at the very most, a loving and spiritual and soul connection with, that doesn't necessarily jive with, I'm supposed to pay penance for the rest of my life. That causes some really unique situations to arrive towards the end of the play that I don't think a lot of people are specifically looking like to happen. Mm-hmm. Lots of surprises as a result of that.
Ooh.
It's difficult. It's a really difficult thing because if you know you've done something wrong, specifically caused the death of 20 people, you don't expect, if you're devout, for God to send something good. Mm. And when God sends something good, it shakes your world. And you think, is this a test? Do I deserve this? What is happening? And there's just no, to me anyway, and I think maybe there's no right or wrong answer. You just have to keep plowing through and keep trying to survive and decide whether you want to keep paying a penance or you want to let someone in.
Yeah, a lot of great questions about worthiness, I think, arise.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Justin, what are the deeper messages of the play from how Aurora's portrayal evokes audiences to confront good versus evil, the struggle for new, fresh beginnings in the wake of past horrendous mistakes?
I think for one, forgiveness is hard, whether you're the one who's meeting it out or the one who desperately is seeking it. And I think it is very easy. I often find this in to be the case in my own life. It is so easy for me when I am the one who is asking for it to sort of have that expectation to receive it, but it's very difficult when I'm being the one asked to forgive.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know it sounds completely hypocritical, but I think we all deal with those situations. And then there's that curious idea of second chances, and what does that mean? Is it even possible to reinvent your life after you've done something horrible and not discount yourself from the consequences of the actions that are transpiring, or they're connecting to the actions that you engaged with initially? It's really tricky and very gray, and I think that's the beauty of this piece. It's not offering a singular answer. It's evoking a lot of questions to consider, like what is redemption? What does that look like? Are we able to really start over and tabula rasa and just have a clean slate, so to speak? So it's been a a rich and rewarding experience, again, using the lens of history in a completely reimagined way with this enigma of a character, which I think is just a brilliant choice on Roberto's part, the writer, to give us the opportunity to really craft someone who we think we know, but we don't have to have all of the information to craft because it's in a completely imagined setting in the future. It's those questions of forgiveness and redemption that I'm most interested in and hope that the audience will ponder as they leave the theater. But we also have some great, like, boo moments, too.
Oh, yeah.
Some fun, like, thrill things going on.
Literally, in the minute we have left, let's talk about the devil.
Yes.
Yes, Liz.
Well, so there, as Deanna alluded to, there are different manifestations throughout the play of if the devil exists and what might the devil look like. Is it sort of a creature or a person? And so I don't want to give any spoilers, but there are some different explorations. But what we do is we take that step away from the crucible where the devil's alluded to, and the devil is real in this play. And that's, I think, sort of the new exploration, that evil is manifested in some type of form in mm-hmm. this play, which is really kind of creepy and wonderful to work with.
Justin Anderson, Deanna Rodriguez, this has been fascinating. I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Abigail 1702 opens at Aurora Theater in downtown Lawrenceville tomorrow, and it runs through October 15th.